Imagine earning continuing education credits while doing exactly what you're doing right now. Well, you can. Gable Media has revolutionized the way you earn your continuing education credits with a groundbreaking approach. Forget running around town and scouring the internet for credit-worthy courses. Fulfill your CE requirements effortlessly by listening to engaging podcasts just like the one you're listening to now. Our podcasts are designed to educate, entertain, and inspire, all in a user-friendly environment. But wait, there's more. Architects, Gable Media is also approved as an AIA Continuing Education Services provider. Upon completion, we handle everything, from reporting your hours directly to the AIA, to storing your certificates in your personal Gable Media profile for your self-reporting needs. So follow the link in the show notes and start earning your credits in the most innovative and entertaining way possible with Gable Media.
Context and Clarity has been called a community-based pro-practice masterclass for architects. It's awfully high praise, but since we began this journey back in April of 2020, we've certainly grown into a community of small firm architects, all focused on what matters most to their success. And by the way, it doesn't matter if you're the employee of a firm that's dreaming of going out on your own, or you've owned your own firm for 26 years. There's something here for everyone. And that's where you come in. Thanks for listening and welcome to the Context and Clarity podcast. Every week, we have a conversation with an expert or a thought leader on things that matter most to the success of architects just like you. Then we go backstage with someone from our community and we talk about what we learned, what our biggest takeaways were, and how we're going to apply what we heard to our own businesses. In this episode, we talked to Michael E. Gerber. He's the author of The E-Myth Revisited. He's the co-author of The E-Myth Architect, and now Making It On Your Own in America, or wherever you may happen to live, a radical journey towards self-employment. As you listen in, you'll hear that Michael challenged small firm architects to be more entrepreneurial, and even to rethink what the architecture of architecture is in order to change the way that architecture is practiced in the future. I realized during this conversation that Michael is also a professional provocateur. He's here to challenge us. And to be honest, some of our audience wasn't here for it. He rubbed some of our community the wrong way, but I actually think that that's a good thing. Listen in as my co-host Catherine McPhail and I talk with architects Isra Banks and Christian Nielsen Palacios about our conversation with Michael E. Gerber. So we've invited Isra Banks and Christian Nielsen Palacios to join us backstage. Isra is an architect and an educator and the founder of Trivec Architects in Boston, Massachusetts. And Christian is an architect, a spec writer, a translator, and a QAQC hawk based in Ithaca, New York. So Isra and Christian, welcome backstage.
What an introduction. I'll have to hire you to record that for my website or something.
Thanks for having us, Jeff. It's always a pleasure to be with you and Catherine.
I'm glad you're here.
What a day to be here.
It is quite a day to be here. We talked to Michael E. Gerber, the author of The E-Myth and The E-Myth Revisited and apparently about 22 other books. My first impression was that was quite a ride. I was encouraged because a number of people commented there at the end that they really enjoyed the conversation. But what's your big takeaway? Anybody, what's your big takeaway from that conversation today? I'm sure it'll be somewhat controversial. So let's get into it.
I thought it was great myself. I feel like he really called it when he was talking about, I mean, he was really literally describing me being upset working on Minnie and Murray's garage and that, you know, I didn't go out to save the world and then to end up doing this garage. So that was like, how do you know me so well? I have to go to your dreaming room class because you know me so well. Harsh reality.
In the first 10 minutes, he started with, you need to make architecture available for everyone. And that was it for me.
For example, one, as an entrepreneur, one would think about popularizing architecture and to make it available to the least among us, so that it would become an intelligent system as opposed to a professional architect. A professional system would be absolutely constructible were one to think, how could I do that without me having to be there? How could we, in short, automate this process in an intelligent manner that wouldn't reduce architecture to banality, but in fact expand its capability, but at significantly less cost than a professional would insist upon? And suddenly you realize that it releases it from the architect and produces an artificial intelligent methodology that could do what in fact the least and most effective architect could never do, but to do it for everyone.
Ever since, I don't know, but since I started teaching, ever since I, for the past probably 7 to 10 years, I have been obsessed with this idea, is architectural dying. How do we revive this? How do we make it available for everyone? Why people don't take architects seriously? Why is it only for the 1%? And yeah, to me, that's a very big problem. It really worries me. And when he said, this is the only way, or probably I understood it like that, this is the only way to systemize it and make it more affordable and make it more efficient and find a way. There is a way. He's not an architect. It's our job to find it. We're not going to hire an IT or a software creator to come up with a software that makes architecture available for everyone. So if one of us or the collective of us come up with something that makes architecture available for everyone, that would be the revival of architecture.
You know, you said something right there that I had not thought about. You know, you were talking about the fact that people don't take architects seriously. And, you know, it's up to us and, you know, everything that Michael talked about. And when you said that, what registered in my mind was, if people aren't taking architecture seriously, maybe it's because architects are not taking the business of architecture seriously. Because that's usually where the complaint stems from. Like, oh, well, you know, they're beating our fees down. Or it's usually a business-related complaint, not a design-related complaint or things like that. And I had not processed that.
To be honest, I feel that, I should never say that, but I'm going to say it. I feel that the value we provide to our clients is disproportionate with the fee we ask for. Although we spend much more effort and time than our fee. Our fee is very small to the effort we spend because of our methods. I see doctors when they see a patient with a long history and they spend like 10 minutes reading there. That's the complete opposite of, they're not putting enough time, but we put a lot of time, and that time can be shrunk if we develop better systems.
Yeah, but then if you just charge hourly, then you just did it in an hour where it used to take you 40 hours and then not an hour to 40.
You don't need to charge hourly, or you can have your hour like for $1,000 per hour.
But at the same time, we're talking about making it accessible to everybody. So isn't that making it more affordable? Isn't the reason it's not accessible because of the cost of what we do?
So imagine if you have all these systems, I don't know what systems are, but you're going to design a house in probably 2 hours and you're going to charge for it $2,000 instead of $20,000. Wouldn't that be amazing for you and your client? And then much more clients would hire architects instead of going to contractors or having cookie cutter houses, not cookie cutter, but much more standardized than custom, but custom can still be there. Let's say similar to clothing, fashion industry have all kind of stuff, and everyone is working and everyone is selling. I don't see us wearing the same clothes, but I see houses are all the same. In my neighborhoods, they all look the same.
Let me preface my words by saying, in preparation for this today, I just read a summary that I found on Kindle of the E-Myth Revisited. So I had not read specifically the one on architects. But while I agree with everything that Isra is saying, I don't think that's what he writes about in his books. And that his books all focus on you being a business with many employees and making a product that you can standardize and make to the same, or he doesn't even say better quality in the summary that I read. And that's not what all of us do. I'm glad that many of the entry architects that were there today seem to appreciate and enjoy his presentation, but there's a few of us who are different, and I'm one of them. So when I asked if I should be reading another one of his books, because I don't make coffee or donuts or hamburgers or even drawings, so I don't have a product to sell and standardize. All I do is give advice to people. So I'm more like a equivalent to a psychologist, I suppose, or maybe an accountant. So I asked if I should be buying the book he wrote for the accountants instead of the one for architects. And he didn't respond to that. But then he said something disparaging self-employment, that if you don't aspire to have a company of 1,000 and things like that, then all you have is self-employment. So maybe that is the definition of what I'm doing. And that is exactly what I want. So then he went on to call me an idiot for thinking that way, which I did not appreciate, and I disagree with him. But maybe he needs to write another book for self-employed idiots.
They're all for self-employed idiots, Christian. I think that's the point. Right. I mean, well, actually, the way I read it was that he was talking about systematizing the way that you do things and the way you work, like that, all of the different things that go into running the business, not necessarily standardizing like the hamburger production or something like that. So I was thinking at one point that instead of thinking about serving the clients in a standardized way, really, I was thinking that we could put together a laptop, let's say, that has all the programs that you need on it and a manual how to run your company. And so what do you do when the calls come in? What do you do when you go to the people's houses to talk to them? And so that whole thing, you take out, I mean, it's only one person's opinion of which one's the best program to use for this and that and everything, right? But you hook them up with Calendly and whatever else systems you have come up with to run your business. And so that's a thing that you would sell. So I was thinking, how would you sell it? Would be like a book, but I guess it could just be a laptop that's already loaded with all this stuff. So then this new architect coming out of school can just buy this laptop that's already got all what they need on it. And like, this is how you do it on the business side of things.
Yeah, the closest thing I can think of is, let's imagine going to a website and buy a car from a website and customize it, build your own. And like, this is the color of the leather I want. This is, and you just check boxes. Let's think of a building as if it was a car, redesign it and make like schematics for it as if it was a car.
Well, that would be like pre-designing the houses, basically. You could make it affordable that way.
Yep.
But that isn't a business that you can sell. Like standardizing the plans isn't really the business. You know, that's not the business part of it. That's the product.
Yeah. One thing that intrigued me was, and just for those of you that don't know, a peek into the insanity that is Context and Clarity. To prepare for these kind of conversations, I'll listen to books and podcasts and things. And so leading up to this conversation with Michael Gerber, since I guess Friday of last week, I listened to his new book, Making It On Your Own in America or wherever you happen to live, re-listened to E-Myth Revisited, and re-listened to the E-Myth Architect, and then some podcasts and some other things. And I finished re-listening to the E-Myth Architect this afternoon. And when I was asking him, how do you mesh the McDonald's and, hey, I'm designing a custom home, you know, into this business, what I expected was the things that they talked about in the eMyth Architect, right? Where we've got systems, you know, Israel, you talked about this. You've all kind of touched on this. You've got checklists and you've got systems for hiring and for production and for answering phones and, you know, these types of things. That's what I expected. But what I heard him say, and, you know, sometimes we hear what we want to hear, but what I heard him say was something completely different, as in you need to rethink about what architecture is and what the practice of architecture is. And that actually excited me because I think we do need to rethink. I don't know if it needs to be more affordable. I was surprised that he said make architecture available for everybody. I don't disagree with that at all, but I really do. I mean, it's one of the reasons I teach pro practice.
I think he was listening to your YouTube or something. Maybe, you never know.
Maybe. I don't know. I mean, that's literally why I agreed to teach pro practice, because I think we do need to rethink about what the business of architecture is. Christian, when I look at what you do with the translation and the spec writing and the QA QC with that model that you have, I think that's really important. I think that's a really important example. What I see in the future, I think it's already going on, is that big firms, I mean, like the large firms, maybe the mega firms, I think they keep getting bigger. I think we lose the middle-sized firms. I think there's, at some point, there's this vacuum where there are no middle-sized firms anymore. And what you have is the large firms and then boutique firms. And I think that's totally all right. You know, I think there's room for that where we play our roles and our very specific roles. But I also think it does require us to reimagine what the practice of architecture means. And it can mean something for you, Isra, and something for you, Christian, and something for you, Catherine. It can be different. But that I was not expecting.
Were you expecting to have him say those things about John Jones wanting to be Franklin Wright?
No.
Neither was John. Oh, no. Yeah. But you know what? Speaking of devil's advocate, I kind of feel like Christian, what's the problem if I just want to be doing my job by myself and I'm just self-employed? Who cares? You know, I look at Triscuits, for example, in the supermarket. There are always new flavors. Like, not everything has to scale, does it? Or does it?
I don't think so.
I mean, I go back to in eMyth Revisited, maybe some of the other books as well, probably some of the other books as well. He says the purpose of business is to grow something to be sold, I guess, you know, some version of that. And so if that's his premise, I completely understand saying that if you're a company of one, mm-hmm. you're self-employed and that's a problem.
Yeah.
For him.
Right. Yeah, that's his.
If we accept the premise that's his point of view, if we start there, then Jerry the architect. What did he say? Was Jerry the architect has no value?
Well, and I get that too, right? You work a career, and you know, we look around the room right now, and we're all solopreneurs essentially. So there's that, but so you get to the point where you're done. And we talked about this several weeks ago. I don't remember what our topic for the week was, but do you just hang it up? Do you pass it off to somebody else? Do you sell it? You know, what's the legacy of this thing, or what's the, you know, what comes next after you're done? And, you know, there's a part of me that completely understands, you know, I put in a lot of work and a lot of effort. Wouldn't it be great to get something out of this, right? To get some payoff. Those of you who are listening to this can't see me raising my hand. I'm not headed in that direction. I'm not headed in the direction right now of a payoff of something that I can sell. So I get that sentiment, but I also get what we talk about when we talk about quality of life and things like that too.
Yeah, because I think a lot of his measuring criteria have to do with monetary gain. And, obviously, I live in a country where having money is important and essential because everything is kind of so expensive, including vital needs that we have. But I am fortunately, at a stage in my life where my happiness and lack of stress is a much more valuable thing to me than the amount of money that I make, or even more, the amount of money that I could make if I did things differently. And I don't care about that. If they're, you know, if I kick the bucket tomorrow, too bad, you know.
Right.
I don't need to leave a legacy or to sell the firm or train people to continue when I'm gone or unable to do it.
Yeah, I think, you know, to be clear, whichever one of his books that you pick up, you know, pick the version, they are strictly about business and making money. I have not seen, I guess he does start off with the dream and the purpose and those things, but his ultimate goal is not being, well, I shouldn't say that. I was going to say it's not being happy or balanced, because they do talk, he does talk about that.
He talks about that, yeah.
Yeah, he does. But they are absolutely, you know, you're in business to make money kind of books.
Yeah, but going back to Isra's thing about serving the 99% or whatever, I think that's something I would love to do. But in order to be that efficient that you can design a house in 2 hours, it means that it cannot be totally custom. You know, like you can maybe vary the floor plan or the number of bedrooms, but you say, my wall section is what I drew already. It's already drawn, the wall section, and the products are already selected, the systems and so on, because that's the only way I can accomplish this in 1 day or 2 hours or whatever the number is. And then the thing is that many of that 99%, they don't have the money. Just yesterday, I was asked to submit a proposal to design a facility for homeless women and their children. And obviously, the organizations that would hire me, they don't have the funds to pay full price or to hire HOK or some star architect. So our values matter too. So I will submit a proposal that will not be for the rate that I prefer to charge, because it's a project that I'm interested in, not because of the money I'm going to make, but because of the difference that project is going to make in the lives of however many women are served in that facility.
I think one of the things he talked about in the book was that if you're a technician and you start your own business and work for yourself doing that, you've created this job for yourself, but you don't, it's even worse than before when you work for somebody else, because you can't take time off, and it's just, you create a worse situation for yourself. So I kind of got the impression that he was trying to point out to, well, maybe it's just because I'm a technician, so I was taking it this way, but just to develop the manager and entrepreneur side of my business so that it could be more balanced and so that I can have more freedom as someone who's doing what I'm doing. That's a message I got from that book, the Revisited.
If we had had 5 more minutes of time, my next question would have been, is it possible to be a solopreneur and work on the business rather than in the business? Because you have to be the technician, you have to be the practicing architect. And we could say, well, yeah, you balance the time and all of these things, but every decision you make and every next thing you do takes away from what still needs to be done and, you know, what the next thing is. And so that was that idea of balancing the technician and the manager and the entrepreneur is obviously central to the whole eMyth system, and getting to the point of even getting help. But then all of a sudden, it's more than just me. So, you know, that coming back around, is it possible to work on the business rather than in the business in a real way if you're by yourself?
In the past year and a half, I was making a deliberate decision not to take a lot of projects or say no, even though I'm just starting. I can't say I balanced it, because there was like 2 months increments where I do this part of business and the other part, the technician and the visionary and the managerial. But I like it that way. So I can focus on growing the business, scaling it to where it needs to be. And probably then I get the kind of projects I want.
You know, one thing that I find intriguing as well is if you think way back, I don't remember which episode this was, but we talked to Patrick McLamey. He retired as the CEO of HOK, and he'd been there 50 years. He talked about Helmuth's manifesto. And in the manifesto, Helmuth says there have to be three partners. There's the marketing, there's the design, and there's the operations, essentially. And I'm not sure if I've got all the words exactly right. That manifesto predates the E-Myth by 40 years, I think. But you see the parallels there. If you have an entrepreneur, a manager, and a technician, those are essentially the roles that Helmuth said you have to have. So that was kind of an epiphany moment for me as well, I guess.
Yeah, me too. I was thinking, like, what if there's a group of people that have all these qualities or character traits and make a group and that the business would be running up and running really fast?
Someone asked, and I don't think he answered, but other than his co-author for that book, has he ever worked with an architect?
Yeah, he mentions, I think in the book too, he mentions working with numerous architects as a business coach. But I think the question Edward asked if he has hired an architect.
Yeah.
And so he want to gauge if he understands the process of architecture. I know what Edwards means, and I'm not, I think I have talked about some of these principles in the past, and the community of Wantry Architect did not like what I said. I know where they're coming from about customer, but again, we need to make this available to everyone. We need to make architecture, otherwise it's going to die.
Well, that's a different debate we could have another day, because I kind of feel like maybe people aren't interested. So how do we get them interested?
They're not interested because they cannot afford it.
Are they though?
Well, some of Entre Architects members said, I can't hire myself. I cannot afford myself.
I think that goes back to what is the practice of architecture? What are the services that architects provide and why? If you were starting a business today, and we do this in my class, you have to identify a problem. And when we go through this process, you know, what's the problem that needs to be solved? And then the very next question is there anybody else that, number one, agrees that that is a problem? And number two, is willing to pay for a solution to that problem? And if the answer is no, you're not going to develop a business around that. It can't be a business. And there's a part of me that feels like in the practice of architecture, we're kind of there, right? If we're having this conversation right now on the heels of Michael Gerber saying you've got to rethink what architecture is, the architecture of architecture, that brings me back to that point, right? If nobody can afford it, if no one's willing to pay for it, if we know there's a problem, we can provide a solution, but nobody wants it, no one's willing to pay for it, do you actually have a business? And I know that, you know, that may be a little bit radical, maybe a lot bit radical for a lot of our audience, but I think that's realistic in at the end of 2021 to ask questions like that.
You understand, to sell an architectural firm in which Jerry is the architect is a very unsatisfying experience. I mean, what do you sell? You've got nothing to sell. Entrepreneurship is about creating something that is highly differentiated in the marketplace. Differentiation is critical to brand. Entrepreneurship is about inventing a brand. A brand is a unique highly differentiated service, system, business, entity, enterprise on the planet. In a world of all the others who effectively, despite the resistance to the term commoditization, are in fact commoditized, because the average architect isn't Frank Lloyd Wright. The average architect is John Jones, struggling to make a living in podunk wherever, doing it, and extraordinarily frustrated that he isn't regarded as Frank Lloyd Wright. And when he knows he possesses the ability to become Frank Lloyd Wright, if only other people would recognize him. In short, it's a hopeless task. And so the problem is the commoditization of the profession is simply created by the way the profession is launched, enacted, and commoditized on the planet. How to distinctly differentiate our architect from everyone else is the question. And in the process of doing that, we're going to reinvent architecture from the ground up. Because I'm not an architect doing that, I'm an entrepreneur doing that. So I'm not identified, I'm not narcissistically identified, I'm not egocentrically identified with my position as an architect. I have nothing to protect. I have nothing to defend. I have nothing to argue about. I'm in a completely new realm, the realm of creating on a blank piece of paper with beginner's mind an outcome that I right now at this very moment haven't a clue how to do. But I do know that if I can literally transform the state of architecture worldwide, I will find a way to make it more democratically available to every human being on the planet. I'm essentially saying that everyone should possess the ability to design their world in a way that illuminates the greatest values inherent in the visual, in the emotional, in the functional, in the financial reality that we get to construct. I'm suggesting to be able to do that for everyone would be absolutely a stunning achievement.
You talked about McLamy, who to me was a truly wise, successful guy. Gerber reminded me more of Munger.
Mm-hmm.
Specifically because of the E-Myth Architect book, or just in general?
He seemed as arrogant as we architects are supposed to be, and not knowing really what it is to be an architect, even if he wrote a book about it.
He didn't claim he knows. He said it's on you to figure it out. And I appreciate that. He identified a problem and he's trying to push us to find a solution for it. And he was a provocative, but...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's definitely a provocateur.
Yeah, he knows it too.
You know, we have been bombarded, and I do appreciate it because I have come to realize the importance of that. But I don't know when I joined Entre Architects and when I started going to your challenges and stuff like that. But the whole thing about focusing in your niche and determining who your ideal client is, I have come to believe in that. I wonder who Gerber's ideal client is, because he seems to want to write a book that applies to everybody and anybody.
Okay. I was going to point out something totally obvious. I thought, I don't even want to say it on there because I don't want to seem as, you know, reveal my true thoughts. Okay. So he, when he has his book, right, the E-Myth, and then it's all about systematizing something so you can do it over and over again with other people. Then he wrote 19 books on different industries, and it was all in the same formula so that he could sell this thing, right? Am I right? So he kind of created that thing.
Yeah, my thoughts exactly.
He is exactly. I mean, to me, that is the true genius of what he has done, is that he has created the thing and systematized it and franchised it. This franchise of E-Myth franchise in the books is exactly what he describes in the E-Myth in book form. And there's a part of me that looks at that and goes, there's something about that that doesn't necessarily sit right, because I want every one of these products to be completely creative and new. But then there's a part of me that really respects the fact that that is so meta that he took the idea and turned it into 19 or 20, however many there actually are, which, by the way, it's really hard to figure out how many there actually are. Go to Amazon and Wikipedia and all this, and you get a different count every time, but there's at least 19 of them.
Yeah. So I thought that seemed so obvious that I didn't want to bring it up before, but I just had to check and see if that was actually true.
I think that's the elephant in the room. And in all the stuff that I listened to, no one's ever brought that up.
Right. So I didn't want to be the first one.
Yeah. No, I was reading the books and I was like, good. He did the burger thing on his own business. Of course.
He did the burger thing on his own business. Yep.
Well, you know what I think I'd like to implement from the whole burger thing is a uniform, because that's really important. I think anybody who comes to work for me, I'm going to tell them what they have to wear to work.
Black, high neck.
Yeah, a scarf is okay. You can get a color in a scarf, but black otherwise. I don't know. I was really and kind of inspired by it. It's kind of like shaking stuff loose it's like shaking a building and all the stuff is falling out of the rafters, kind of.
Interesting conversation.
Yep. That's why we get to have it as a podcast to listen again.
Exactly.
I forget which Enter Architect session it was that prompted me to buy the domain for thegrouchyarchitect.com. Oh, yeah. Maybe I should go now and buy theidiotarchitect.com and see what happens.
Well, what did you think? Did you hear something in there that you can use in your practice today? If you are so inspired by this conversation that you'd like to watch the entire Context and Clarity Live episode, head on over to the Entree Architect YouTube channel. There's a playlist there that has all of the full Context and Clarity Live episodes. And if you want more of the Context and Clarity podcast delivered to you every week, give us a thumbs up and subscribe wherever you consume podcasts. If you like content like this, check out Gable Media. It's a multimedia network for people that care about the built environment, and it's the home of Context and Clarity. With Gable's growing family of podcasts and video channels, I know you'll find something there that interests you. You can learn more at gablemedia.com. That's gablemedia.com. And one last thing before you go. If the topic of today's episode is of particular interest to you, join me over on Facebook today at 4 p.m. Eastern inside the Entree Architect Community Facebook group. That's where every weekday at 4 p.m. Eastern, I host Context and Clarity Conversations, and we take topics like this, and we dig deeper. We have a conversation in real time to try to find more clarity around the things that matter most to you. So thanks for listening. I hope our time together has inspired you to think about your community and your practice and how you can support those around you. We'll be back here again next week, and in the meantime, I hope you'll join me and the Entree Architect community on Facebook today at 4 p.m. Eastern so that we can help each other find more clarity around the topics that matter most, no matter what your context is.
From historic homes to modern architecture, brick is one of the most popular building materials around the world.
How to allow the house to bridge the gap between the history of the site, the approachability of this kind of architecture in this kind of neighborhood, and this sort of nostalgia of materiality for the client's past, right? And brick really started to provide an answer for that.
Hi, I'm Doug Pat, and this is Design Vault. There aren't many materials that easily blend with any style and context, but brick does just that. I've seen some extraordinary work with brick, so when Glengarry approached me about hosting this podcast, I couldn't say no.
typically Tudor-style houses from outside are just stunningly gorgeous piece of structure. And when you go in, it's just sad.
Yeah.
Dark. And that is not going to happen with my approach to design.
I speak with industry leaders and share inspiring stories behind their work and ingenious design.
You'll see brick that's fashioned into basket weave patterns, sawtooth patterns, what's known in England as diapering.
Doesn't sound like you knew them per se, right? They found you through relationships that you had with other.
Well, wait, Doug, there's more.
Okay.
We'll go behind the scenes to understand process and even the inspiration that sparked the design.
You know, I think we were inspired by all the factory buildings in Dumbo. I mean, that is the kind of period of significance, that early American factory building.
Design Vault by Glenn Gary. Visit glengarry.com/design-vault or search for Design Vault wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe now to stretch your imagination.